Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Founders Grid, sponsored by Gaper.io. Today we have Alyssa. Alyssa is the VP of Product at HallHub. Alyssa, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So can you give us a brief background about yourself, what you've been doing prior to joining HallHub?
Sure. So right now I'm the VP of Product at HallHub. Before that, my background is in tech startups. I've typically been in a product role. And it's interesting where people don't really start off in product, or most people don't. People find their way into product. There isn't exactly a bachelor's of science or for undergrad in product management. There might be ones for computer science or chemistry, biology, et cetera. But the people have different ways to find it. From what I've seen, people find it of one of three, where they come in from the customer support side and really understand the user journey, what are people asking for, how do people use their platform, and then want to grow to help them. And so then say, okay, I see their problem, how do I then build the solution and get to the, move from one set of front lines to another set of front lines. And then they grow to be associate PMs, product managers, et cetera. Then there's people that come from a more technical track where they start on the inside and they're in the engineering team and they're writing all the code. And then they want to get on the other seat and do the product management, thinking about the specs, the requirements, the user journey, and take a more technical path into the PM world. And then there's folks that come in from more of a design flow where they started off as UI or UX or other kind of design work, and then want to implement their vision, and they can say, I can design it. Now I want to actually bring it to life in that next sphere. And so of those three tracks, I took the path through support, where I at first didn't even know that product management was a field. And then I started off at an early stage startup at Quantopian, 10th employee there. It was the VP of product, several engineers, and then myself. And then I said, I'll do anything you need. I feel like I've got 10 fingers that work pretty well and a brain that can put some things together. And we went to work. And so at that stage, you're a utility player. You do everything besides coding. And so I was on the front lines with support, marketing, product, and then figured out what product was, and then grew from there. By the time I left that company, where we had grown to was we were a platform for introducing anyone and giving them access to quant finance, whether it's teaching them how to code or teaching them about the financial world, marrying those two together, giving them access to education, making it all open source, creating an online community, and then really taking the best of the best that come out from an online community and giving them access to capital to trade their ideas and benefit. And so in this way, where quant finance was a very closed off industry, now they could have access to it, and they don't have to work on Wall Street in order to have that specific set of credentials. And so when I left, we had 250,000 users around the world. We had the first ever crowdsourced hedge fund. I was building a lot of the applications for it and development, and was working really close with all our quant users. And then before that, I was in consulting on tech side, et cetera. And then now I'm happy to be back in the saddle building new things.
So, and how's the journey been so far with HallHub? Can you share a bit on that, please?
Sure, it's been great. I would say that wherever people's journey is coming from, you never really know where that next day or that next week will take you, especially with in the startup sphere. You might have a roadmap, you might have a vision, but the reality is it matters on what happens in execution. And so how does it grow? How do your customers react to what you build? Do you build the right things? And then is the next step exactly what you think it is, or how does the market react to your latest build? And then does it all of a sudden unleash a new opportunity for you? And so for us at HallHub, we started with four people 3 years ago, and now we're over 70 3 years later. We're continuing to grow, we're continuing to expand. So what we're focused on is the supply chain of heavy construction. So thinking about the movement of material, of trucks, of people throughout all of the heavy construction spaces. And how do all of these pieces integrate together? It's an industry that's very manual, based on spreadsheets, phone calls, emails, post-it notes, fax machines. And then what we're doing is building an ecosystem of applications where, depending on what kind of user, what kind of departments there, these all tie together. So how do we think about building transportation management solutions for dispatching, accounting, order management, schedule management, to the back office work of insurance, compliance, safety, to the management level of analytics, efficiencies, process. And then having all these tied together where you want the buyers and sellers to all have all of their orders flow, data to flow, drivers to know what they're getting paid, drivers to know what their dispatch instructions are, and making sure that at the end of the day, this complex web is easy. And that's part of the challenge of making sure that it's streamlined, smooth, and people want to use it. Like, they love it. It's part of their job. They don't have to do it. They want to do it.
So, finding the best user experience with a great product is something like, I would say, just the holy grail, right? So, tell us a bit more about, seems like you've been with Hubhall from the early days on, right? So what was it like, so they say every product goes through 4 to 5 different iterations or 4 to 5 different development cycles, It's first time what the founders think, then it's what the early customers think, and then the next 2 iterations are where the market takes you. So what kind of journeys you've been through that, and can you share some problems where you just kind of like had to take like some hard decisions that eventually paid off in the longer run?
Sure. I think the biggest advice to any startup is to fail fast. You are doing something that no one else has done before. You don't know all the answers. You're trying to figure them out. You're building the spaceship as you're flying it. And you don't really know what those next steps are. And so you always have to be validating your assumptions. And so your customers are going to tell you it. And the best thing that you can do is have a key set of customers that you're working with at every stage, and have them be stakeholders in your process, where you want them to know, what do you see as the next problems? And are those their current problems? How do they talk about it? And then not just do it up front, but stick with them and be close to them at the hip at every step, where you want to show, for example, what we do is we show them all our designs. We will send them our Zeppelins. We'll send them some Figma screenshots. And we're saying, okay, this is what we talked about. Here's how we brought it to life. Here's this on web. Here's this on mobile. What do you think? And if you have these small, quick conversations, it doesn't have to be a big conversation. It doesn't have to be a heavy-handed meeting. You don't have to make it over the top. But if you have these quick gut checks and you get them early as your beta testers, they feel invested in your success just as much as you're invested in their success. And then you'll know very quickly is, will this work just for one customer, or will it then also work across a suite of customers, let's say across the nation, how do different corners of the US run, et cetera. And so the big thing is, don't wait. Don't wait to show someone until you've designed it. Don't wait to show someone until you've released it. Keep on checking in. And then have your team set up in a way where part of your product team is heads down tactical building, and they know their next steps, and they just execute on it. And then part of your team is account management, and they're running this and staying close with the customer. Now, some teams, you can have the PMs do both, depending on their capacity, depending on their expertise. But you also want to know that what you're building next really is the most important versus what you think is important.
True. So, which brings me to my last 2 questions. So, being a VP of product, and managing everything, or being forced to manage everything over Zoom. So how have you been able to do that? And most importantly, in regards to the mental health, because thinking back, you know, in March, April, May, everyone was kind of like working because they wanted to keep their companies active, because the fear factor was there. We need to work harder in order to, because no one knew whether the funding is going to come in or not, how the world is going to react. So it was kind of like a haywire. But then June, July, August onwards, everyone started to feel the burnouts. So how have you been able to navigate through that, and especially the creativity and the processes and managing everything over Zoom? Would you like to share some examples with that?
Sure. So I think in the beginning we were lucky in the sense that a lot of our team was already remote. We had folks in all corners of the US. Part of our team was international. So we already had the foundational processes of, say, Slack, Hangouts, et cetera, to be able to work remotely. And so the other side of that is that what we really encourage our team to do is it comes down to communication. You don't know what you can't see. So in an office setting, you can see who's talking to who you can run to the water cooler, have a quick conversation there. And so your access to information is whatever is in your direct messages or whatever channels you're a part of. And so part of that is to be proactive. So if, for example, you're grabbing lunch, no one knows that. There's no camera that we're on a live stream that we're watching you on. And so do something simple, like put a little sandwich in your Slack stand up and say, hey, I'm out to lunch. I'll be back in 30 minutes making a sandwich. Or if you're in a meeting, put a meeting emoji up in your away message so that people know, okay, this person isn't getting back to me, not because they are distracted, but because they're preoccupied in a meeting. And so the more that you can tell people what you're up to, the more respectful they'll be of your space. And then the other side of that is then, if you are being proactive about why you're unavailable, then when you are available, you have to lean into your messages. And you have to say, okay, someone's blocked on me. Is an engineer that I need to get with? Is it an operations manager that I need to see what's happening with an account? Is it QA, et cetera? And so then being available to do that. And so with that, it's a two-way street. From the mental health side, I think it's important for management to know that just because there's not a commute, that doesn't mean that the work expectations have changed or increased. Management needs to be very careful to allow people to take time off. And that's not the weekend time, that's evening time. And just understanding that there are dinners to still do, there's still bath time. There might now be homework sessions or Zoom sessions where a parent needs to help their child log into a class, or et cetera. And so from that, it's about just keeping the business goals straight of what's needed from your team and what's needed from your personnel, and not micromanaging the actual hours when someone's online. And so from there, if people do have a unique home situation where they're not able to work all of a sudden during the standard work hours because of something outside of their control or happening at home, then they should just communicate that to their managers and say, I will be unavailable at this time. And then you work through it. But again, it comes down to that communication, because people don't know what's happening unless you surface it. And it's not being a squeaky wheel, it's being open and honest so that then it's transparent and people can help.
All right. So which brings me to my last question in regards to personal productivity and personal hacks that you've done in your daily routine after COVID that are helping you to be much more efficient and productive.
Hacks. I don't think we've hacked a lot. Hopefully not.
But, you know, personal, everyone has kind of like come up with some kind of a different routine. They're like, just kind of like be in the mood of office and, you know, just try to be more enjoyable of the time or of the lockdown.
Oh, I see. I mean, I think part of it is forcing ourselves to go outside. So I'm in Boston. It's cold here. It's January right now. It's probably 37 degrees. It's not as inviting of, say, sunny Texas or sunny California in January. And so you still need some kind of mental health routine where you still wake up to your alarm clock at the same time that you normally would, still take that shower, Go for a walk, get some 30 minutes of fresh air or however much you need personally. Make sure you know what your walking routes are. Maybe you have a short one that's 10, 15 minutes if you just need to do something quick because you're running late or have an early meeting. Say a medium one, a medium route and a long route. And then understand what is your workspace versus your home space. That is probably the biggest mental challenge that we're all going through. And everyone has a different setup at home. Some people are lucky enough to have an office where they can close the door. And others, they might be working out of their kitchen or their dining room or somewhere else. And so seeing what can you do to have that space commandeered as a workspace during the work days, and then breaking it down on the weekends so that if you are not in work mode, then you don't have to look at your monitor on Saturday morning and be mentally reminded of that to-do list. If you break it down and you put it away in a closet or something else, it's not physically out of your space and you can transition over to, now you can have your cup of coffee or with your pancakes.
True. Alyssa, thank you so much for being on the show. Take care of yourself and stay safe.
Bye-bye.